expecting the minister that he be allowed to leave by the president. I know when so many ministers want to leave on a Wednesday, there's normally objections because the meeting will collapse or the quorum collapses in the cabinet. But he has indicated that he has requested to leave cabinet early or for a period and then return to cabinet. We have to consider the briefing by IFAC on progress report on the internal document investigation conducted on case closed under special closure. And then we also have the matter of the consideration of the civil court. Honourable Minister, where are Honourable Minister? I just spoken about the Honourable Minister. Thank you.
So in October, they then came to me to say, we are not yet done with the investigation, and we request extension to finalize the investigation. And also at that point, I then wrote to the chairperson to say, kindly grant us the extension to finalize the investigation. So chairperson, what we've done to make sure that we've got enough capacity, we then wrote to the National Treasury, because they've got a team of forensic investigation. To say, can you assist us by seconding few of those forensic investigators to come and assist the IT, so that we can then fast track the investigation. So in principle, they've agreed. They just requested us to send a formal letter to them so that then they can then second that team. So we've already sent the letter to the National Treasury, and we are hopeful that in the coming weeks and they'll be sending that team to come and complement the existing two capacities that we have. And then we then believe that then this investigation can then be finalized as a matter of urgency. Just to give a high-level indication where we are, Jefferson, we've got about 1,650 cases that we need to inspect. So the team currently covers 508, which is 35% of the total population. So we still have about just over 1,000 cases that we need to investigate. So the province that have been completed today, Jefferson, is the fourth model province, which is Limpopo, Northwest, Northern Cape, and Mpumalanga. So those provinces are finalized. So the provinces where they've got a lot of cases, where they still need to do an in-depth investigation in KZN, which is for the bulk of these cases. They've got over 1,000 cases that still need to be investigated in that province. Also, when we are here, Jefferson, what I emphasized was to say this incident happened for the period 2012, and going back to when the IPT Act came into effect. So at that stage already, action was already taken for cases that were identified in Gauteng. So in Gauteng already, when they identified these cases, they immediately initiated the disciplinary action against the two officials. And the one official case was opened, which is the case of disputing the ends of justice. And also the team will then touch in terms of what is that that we've done since that time to make sure that we strengthen our control internally to make sure that this type of incident is not occur again. So Chairperson, at a high level, that is the broader focus, but I will then allow the team to go into detail, so that they can take the members through the methods that we are following and what is the scope of this investigation. But at a high level, Chairperson, that is the process overall in terms of how far we are in the investigation.
Thank you, Chairperson. Honorable Minister, honorable members, good morning. I'm Mamadisha Mwese. I'll be taking you through the presentation. As the acting EG has already indicated, he gave an overview, a summary of what I consider an already brief presentation to the committee. But allow me to take you through. In terms of the outline of this presentation, I'll be sharing with the members briefly the introduction to this investigation, background to the investigation, and how much was supposed to be done in terms of this investigation, the investigative process itself, the preliminary findings, what has been done so far in terms of consequence management, the challenges that the team experienced, and what we propose in terms of way forward, and then I'll conclude. In terms of our introduction, members are aware that there's been a lot of media interest pertaining to the so-called, special closure, which is the alleged closure of cases that have been not properly investigated. Now, if one were to ask, what are we talking about when we refer to special closure? Ideally, this is a system-generated process to enable police and management to complete and close cases which do not require referral to the National Prosecuting Authority on whereby recommendations did not be made to the South African Police Service or the Municipal Police Service. Now, the reason we are actually making this presentation is to give progress in terms of what has been done pertaining to this investigation to the Honorable Minister. Now, the background to this whole process, what is it that prompted the IP to start this investigation? In 2016, a whistleblower approached our then ethics officer with allegations of special closure of cases, specifically in two provinces, the Gauteng and the KwaZulu-Natal. As I've already indicated, these were allegations of cases closed prematurely. And as you can see, we have highlighted a list of cases that were implicated. For example, we have our assault cases, which in terms of our IP Act, they are classified under Section 28.1F. Cases of corruption, classified as Section 28.1G and the rest. Okay. If we move forward, slide number 5. On receipt of this whistleblower report, the ethics manager then approached the then accounting officer who instituted this investigation and requested our integrity strengthening unit to conduct the investigation. Now one would ask why this specific unit internally. You will be aware that the integrity units are mandated by Chapter 6 of the Public Administration Management Act, Act No. 11 of 2014. In addition, our very own IPIS Act gives them the power to do this kind of investigation. If members allow, I don't have to read what they are mandated to do. Okay, now in terms of how much work were the integrity strengthening unit members supposed to do? I've already alluded to the fact that when the report was presented to IT, it was basically or specifically pertaining to two provinces, Gauteng and KwaZulu-Natal. Now, the officials were expected to identify all, if any, loopholes which might have existed in the process, and to also identify individuals or persons, if any, to be held accountable for any transgressions of any of their IP policies or transgressions of any procedures that were in place at the time of closure of these cases. But in the process, there was a request to extend the scope, to expand it to all the other provinces to determine the extent of the problem. Now, in terms of the investigation process, what the team did, they had to go to the case management system. That is where all the cases that our investigators are entering are housed. So from there, they identified all the cases for each province, and then they communicated with the respective provinces and say, province A, this is a list of cases in your province that are allegedly closed under the notion of special closure. The communication was via email, telephonic follow-up, and then they requested the provinces to make available the specific case files for them to investigate. So when they got to the provinces, they physically investigated each and every file. But members should take note that the officials did not manage to investigate all the cases, all the files that they made available to them for reasons that we will highlight later. And in the interim, even all the members that were implicated, that is, as they were going through investigating, inspecting the files, and they find that there is a certain memo of who is implicated, not all such individuals were given the right of reply due to availability and many other reasons. Remember, we are taking investigators who might be in the field doing investigations, who could have been in court at the time and were thus not available for interview. Now, the team, the control measures that they put in place was just to ensure that in their investigation, they ensure that the standard operating procedures have been followed. The ED directives that were in place then were also followed, and every other legislative framework has been followed as expected. In the process, they were also consulting with the head of national investigations where they needed some clarity. I've already indicated that they also got the information in terms of the referred cases on the case management system. They obtained affidavits from implicated officials in the respective provinces. On slide number 9, we are just giving a summary of the consolidated statistics. I'm saying it's consolidated because we did not provide a breakdown in terms of the classification of cases. For example, if we are saying in Eastern Cape, from our case management system for this province, there were 10 cases that were allegedly closed under special closure. We did not, for the purpose of this presentation, break it down in terms of the categories. Say maybe 2 are assault, 3 are rape cases, we didn't do that. That's why we call it a consolidated. So members can see that in total, we have 1,661 cases. And of these numbers, our two officers only managed to investigate 580 of these cases, which constitutes 65%. We are not even at 60% yet. So 65% still needs to be investigated. Okay. Now, when you look at the list, you can see that in terms of the numbers, KZN is on top of the list with 1,259 cases, followed by Housing, 154 cases, Free State, 121, and Western Cape, 67 cases. The preliminary findings that the members could come up with, remember, from the few cases that they have investigated this far, they realized that in the four provinces, Limpopo, Mpumalanga, Northwest, and Western Cape, from the cases that they investigated, and emphasizing the cases investigated, because when you check that table, you can see that, remember, when I started, I said they went to the case management system. They identified all the cases pertaining to each province, and then they requested to be provided with the cases as they appear on the list. Now, in some cases, not all the cases were provided. So for those that they could investigate, these were the findings in terms of these four provinces. To say, for Mpumalanga, Limpopo, Northwest, and Northern Cape, they couldn't find any irregularity. And then in these other provinces, while information as requested could not be availed, all of it, some case files were presented, some could not be made available. And then in one province specifically, KZN, which has the largest number of cases, information that was provided, they couldn't handle it. Remember, we are talking only two officials, and you look at the volume that they had to handle. So what was provided, they couldn't even finish. I think they did about 380 in case of KZN. Now, the other finding, the preliminary finding that they could come up with, was they identified that in some cases, case files were closed without taking time report. In some cases, remember, in terms of our standard operating procedures, when cases are reported at the staff or the municipal police, those that fall within the IT mandate have to be replied for. Now, in some cases, it has been found that the police themselves have already conducted the investigation to finalize before they could wear the virtual ID. And it was realized that our investigators did not do the investigation. So the data conditions on what the staff of the MPS has already investigated. This is what the staff would have to do. Case files already investigated by staff prior to collection. And this is invading the intent of our procedure. And then, okay, this is supporting the previous bullet of saying, in some cases, yes, it was found that no, the procedures were not properly followed. Now,
my apologies for interrupting. Honorable okay. Members, the first time the problem of the ACOM is all the time. And
in particular, we have got a criminal case that was opened, and already there is one official who has been implicated who resigned from IP employment, and one official was detained from working out of this investigation. Now, the challenges that I've been talking about, as a standard resource concern. I've already mentioned that in this intensive shift strengthening unit, we are only touching two individuals. Remember, this was not a special project that they were focused on. In addition to doing this investigation on special projects, they still have other work in terms of what they signed for in their performance agreement. For example, there will be other cases of unethical conduct reported to them that they are expected to investigate alongside these special cruiser cases. So that's why I'm taking competing priorities. And the magnitude of the investigation as well as the complexity of the investigation itself didn't make it easy for them. That's why very little has been done. Now, in terms of a way forward, from our side, the SPDB has already indicated that we are requesting to be given time and extension to finalize all the outstanding cases. For us to inspect all the cases, to afford the implicated officials the right of reply, and also the chance to interview the victims. Remember, the process is not as easy as ABC. You might want to interview a particular complainant only to find that they are not available at the time. So these are some of the issues that causes the process to delay. In addition, he has already said that, we have requested the National Treasury to assist us with additional resources so that we can speed up the finalization of this process. To conclude, honorable members, we are saying as IT, we view allegations of irregular special closure of cases in a serious manner, because this goes against our mandate and the values of the department. It changes the image of the department, and as such,
victims or our complainants do not get justice. So, in trying to restore the integrity of our investigation, we would like to ensure that all cases are investigated and those who are implicated are disciplinary steps are taken against them. Thank you, Honorable.
Thank you.
So
now we're going to
Thank you very much, Professor. I think in conclusion, I just want to reassure members that we'll do everything possible to make sure that this investigation is finalized. As I've already said, National Treasury has committed that they will assist us with additional resources so that we can try and finalize the investigation. It's a very complex investigation. It started in 2015. I think then it was 2 years before I joined ICC. Just to show you that it's a very complicated investigation. So what I'm trying to do from my side is just try and push the team to say, let me support the team, give them the necessary resources so that they're able to finalize the investigation. So from my side, Chairperson, we'll keep on updating the portfolio committee in terms of the progress that we're making until we conclude the investigation. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Minister. Minister, would you like to conclude?
Well, not necessarily. It's always fun when investigators are fully investigated. We hope we find out what happened. I fully agree with the head that we have to maintain and keep the accuracy of the processes of the board. So that the people that can be finally proper products or support. We are quite pleased with the availability of more resources, including human resources from the treasurer who are having expertise in dealing with forensic investigation. And we hope that also to further attract to the outcomes that we need.
Thank you very much.
Can you give us figures maybe in which provinces are you going to focus on and also that. And then the issue of extension, so time frame when you request an extension from us. When you request an extension, you must give us time and say that you request an extension for 6 months in this area or whatever, so that we know clearly when you request it for an extension. Because I think Chair, those were my comments.
Thank you very much, Honorable Parker. Next, Honorable Wilson.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and good morning to the Minister. Thank you very much for being here today and attempting to just clarify where we are in the process of the appointment of the IGIS. And I think the Chairperson was right to ask you to preempt the question because I think the question was going to come, it was inevitable. We were obviously hoping, Minister, that you would do that by November this year, and you've explained to the committee that there were issues that the quality or the quantity or both of the applications wasn't acceptable. But perhaps you could just go further to enlighten the committee as to how many applications have been received and to what extent your office has taken steps to ensure that the selection process is as inclusive and transparent as possible. Because I know that there are a lot of questions about the importance of the accountability role that the NFI plays in ensuring that we are able to select the very important things that we seem to want and continue to want so that we can do so. And then just with regards to the presentation, Chairperson, it is obviously disappointing because we were given the impression that we would receive the report in October. We know that IFED has resource issues, and I think those are valid concerns and valid reasons for why the report and investigation has not been concluded. But if the investigation commenced in 2016, which is a long time ago, and National Treasury has now only been asked to augment or investigate capacity. Why was that not done at the outset of your tenure, maybe not put it that way? That this is something that you've inherited, but with two investigators, I think any person could see that dealing with 1,600 cases and having two investigators, that you would need to act swiftly to augment that investigative capacity to ensure that that we are able to get through as many of those as possible. And then my colleague dealt with the prioritization issue, where KZN is just completely an anomaly in this entire presentation. There is something that appears, when you look at that, to be very, very wrong. And obviously we want to deal with the facts and not just suspicion, but this creates further suspicion in the eyes of the committee that there is certainly something seriously wrong with the special closure process. I just wanted to also understand, ma'am, you mentioned that you kept saying alleged special closure. Now, as I understand from the presentation, special closure is a system-generated process. Is it not the case then that either the case qualifies as special closure or decision ready? Can it be alleged? It's a semantic issue, but it's just important so that we're all on the same page. Is the case either qualify as special closure or decision ready, or is there some other qualification category of case? And then during the course of the investigation, had any of the two investigators or anybody else involved in the investigation brought to your attention any interference regarding the investigation? Any interference from the South African Police Service, any political interference, any missing information, missing files, any resistance to provide information? So it says files were not available. Are there reasons as to why those were not available? Were those brought to your attention? Are they missing? Are they being withheld deliberately? Just if you can clarify those issues for us, that would be greatly appreciated. Thank you.
Thank you,
Honourable
Mr. Brown.
Mr. President, thank you, and also start by welcoming the panel for this morning. So you are most welcome. Thank you. Mr. President, I am, you know, I'm a bit concerned. You know, nearly as my colleagues did touch on, you know, some of the issues. We started with this exercise in 2015. And, you know, for 2 years now, we have been working on that opportunity and we are working on top of it. And then we are asking to allow you guys an extension. You have a capacity of 2 people. That's not working on that on a full-time basis. So are we expected to wait for another 5 or 10 years now, or what is the position? Then we are told that it's a special investigation in terms of your legislation, and I do respect that. I haven't read that part of the legislation, so I'll go acquaint myself about that also. Fact of the matter, you intend bringing in people from National Treasury. Now, apparently, then, if that's the case, if that is possible, you can maybe, you know, strengthen your team. If it's really a priority to you, maybe, you know, you can build some capacity in-house. And while we're on the investigation part, Chairperson, you know, the question is, what is your normal process? Is Mr. X investigator sitting there in case of it, and then he decides that this thing is going to be closed? Or what is the process? Doesn't some person in a senior position go to this case docket, you know, peruse it properly, and then based on the evidence that is contained in that document, make a decision? I'm very concerned. Apparently we have a problem with people not, you know, not being properly managed, supervised, whatever the position is. See, person then, you know, through all the doctors that they went already, you know, we have one criminal case was open, one of these indicators resigned, and one of people was dismissed. So, I don't know. It's a question that I have. If I can leave me then, I've got a few more questions. The investigation is technical and complex. You know, I don't know, maybe that should be explained to us. How can it be that technical? You know, obviously if you do investigation on crime, you know, there are certain elements, you know, needed, you know, that to be a crime. And obviously the person that needs to go through the document to see have this principle or what element of the crime, is it contained in there, was it properly covered? That is the way that you do investigations. I've done it myself in my life. So I don't know, I'm not convinced about the technicality that much. Then, you know, just off the cuff, I would have thought that maybe we need, and maybe that is something that we should investigate, that we must bring in independent investigators. Because at the moment, you know, what we also heard, some people were just not available. They were on leave or to court or whatever, and then also what we heard is that even didn't bring all the dockets or submit all the dockets that they were requested to do. So what are we doing? People can apparently manipulate this process. And I'm seriously concerned about that effort. Then this two-man squad that you have, before this came to the fore, what have they been doing? Was that also their responsibility back then? And if yes, what have they been doing? Because apparently they didn't pick it up before the whistleblower use the whistle. So do you have those classes? Are they functional? That is my question. Chairperson then apparently, and that was also explained to us by the presenter, apparently the process is to do some spot checks. Because the presenter told us that not all case dockets were properly or investigated or checked or whatever. Because apparently, maybe I missed something there, but apparently that is called spot check at random, you know, going to get certain cases, stuff like that. Chairperson, I think for now that is my input, and thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairman.
Thank you, Chairman. Thank you, Honorable Minister. The thing is, I won't be having a lot of questions. Mine is about the capacity of IP. Because when you check, if we talk about two executive officers, we are talking about zero. Because at the present moment, when you talk about investigation, one docket means another one. Now, if we're talking about 1,600 to two, so my biggest worry now is that those cases, most of them, complainants are members of the community, and they don't know what is happening within the act. They are just looking at results. And if a case is dragging for 2 to 3 years without any report back and the feedback and everything, they think that you are doing nothing, almost nothing, that you don't have to investigate us because of that. So we must look at the side of the community. Now, what I think is important is that we get investigators. The minister is here. And it has been said that seemingly we are not doing enough for IPs to investigate. It seems as if there is interference just to break food, not to investigate cases for certain purposes. And maybe because in some other cases there are some certain people involved. Now I think something must be done with the capacity of the IPs. That is, well, we can have a lot of questions, but if we just get investigators to investigate these cases, then we are done. There is nothing more. And thank you.
Thank you very much, Honourable Member Valeka, Yassi, and Pico.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Chair. From mine, let me first start to appreciate. Let me start to appreciate the presentation first, and the fact that with all the challenges that the department has found itself or the institution has found itself, it has come up with solutions on how to approach and to see of making this a success, of which to me is progressive. It's not that you are just sitting and complaining, but you decided to come with the proper means and ways to try and assist making sure that there's a success in the institution. Mine would be, my question would be, what would be the correct ratio of appointing to make this a success? How many would you need to make this a success? Because for us to be here, it's in order to monitor if there's a success or not, and how to assist in order to make that a success. Then on slide 5, it says that under the irregularities that were found, page 11, it says the case file flows without technical report. Mine would be, if cases are closed without technical report, how would there be a process to look into if there's no a technical report with regard to the case that has been closed? Because we need to find closure. If it's like that, it means that there's no closure, or it's how I understand. There's no closure to the case. Then if maybe I don't understand, maybe I'll be explained the process, how it works. But I think that's all from me, Chair. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honourable
Ndoma. It's fine. It's fine. There's nothing to do.
Chairperson, our first question is, are there any more questions to be asked? Monsieur the Minister, and I'd like to note the Honourable Chair, I want to say to the Minister, Minister, you are always welcome at this point. And I must say, I think you are one of the few Ministers who makes an effort to attend the Portfolio Committee, so as far as that. Chairperson, no, I don't think there are many more questions left. Maybe I should summarise, but I want to say the following. Firstly, we must understand we're talking about serious cases here. If we, for instance, look at the presentation, we're talking here about assault, corruption, firearms, death, and all that sort of thing. So it is a really serious matter. Now, Chairperson, on slide 4, I see there are referral to allegations of special closures, cases were allegedly closed, alleged category of cases. So it says alleged. But if I look at the presentation, it's not alleged. It is true. We have these cases. So that's the first thing. And my question, which I can ask, is well, what is the practice at the moment? Yes, we have this period with these cases. Do you still continue with this sort of category of special closure? What steps have you taken to ensure that it does not happen further in the process? And my next question, Chairperson, is if you look at, where is that? Under the investigations, it says, page 11, the irregularities found include, amongst others, case files closed without technical reports, case files already investigated by subs, proper investigation procedures were not followed. Of these cases investigated, Chairperson, how many of those files were closed without technical reports? How many of the files were already investigated? How many of the files the investigation procedures were not followed? It's three statements, but we have no indication, if we look at the number of files, which irregularities are actually involved here. If we can get the figures, maybe we can have a better picture of all the irregularities as far as this whole project is concerned. Thank you.
I'll take another round of questions and then I'll ask you to answer.
Thank you, Chair. I also wanted to appreciate the minister for availing himself to the committee. So I also don't have a question. It's just that I also align myself with my colleagues here that the issue of the IT case will now refer to the response from the minister. I know I was one of the person who asked the question, was supposed to ask the question to Carla. That we have refused now a pool of applicants. And we are saying we are confident that you will get the candidate out of that. In my question, I asked you that in the event that the outcome does not favor Would you consider a situation where you draw out the paper in a time frame? The question, I think, we appreciate the presentation by the IT, although I align with some people, my colleagues, that maybe it's good to the broken up the case that has not been resolved. So next time we understand what are we doing. But we can see here the whole day when we know the problem is that it's a capacity from the IT. In so many cases, and we have only two people. I don't think we'll be able to resolve the case very soon. Maybe even if you request an extension, we can give an extension. An extension is not decided. Because there are so many cases, and some of the cases are taken by specialized employees because the treasure to assist with the truth of the case being reported. I don't know that if they give you it before, we'll still be here next year. What the minister is here is that they need to look into all the capacity, the investigating part of the IT, so that they speed up with cases that are resolved. You know, if they are linked by community members, those cases they link by, and they need to be resolved. But I think also one thing, communication should be important. I know sometimes our people need to say it's not our issue. Why we are saying hiring people here, we see have employed 6,000. But forgetting that we see as a statement, these are technical cases that make people with patients. So we have the same thing that we do try, but still having a challenge of the specialized people. With the IT, we still have the same thing that we need specialized people. My proposal is to say to the minister, we can agree with the extension, but as long as the capacity is not there, you will come again here and say yourself only to take. So maybe the minister will assist in that, how does he capacitate the IT to speed up this case. Thank you.
And any additional items before we allow the minister on the list?
Just a very brief point, change. It just struck me that the investigation is obviously focused for very specific reasons on special closures. Has IPED ever conducted any investigations into decision-ready cases? Have there ever been allegations that necessitated an investigation by the integrity unit regarding, if we look at annual reports, and I've raised this before, and this is across all entities and departments, Chair, the quality of the targets that we hold the entities and departments to are not always best designed to measure the impact of the mandate of that organization. And I think that one of the things about decision-ready cases is that an unintended incentive to push through decision-ready cases. And it comes back to, and I know we had a back and forth on this, the last meeting, my question about convictions wasn't related to the responsibility of high court. It's more related to whether the quality of the actual decision-ready cases was sufficient in all instances to allow a decision to be made by the NPA based on a solid investigation. So the question really is whether any investigation has been done or whether it was considered to take a sample of those decision-ready cases, just to assess whether those were in fact all completed according to all of the standard operating procedures and everything else that we hold in the special criminal cases, that standard.
Thank you very much. Honorable Minister and your team.
Well, thanks. I don't know whether these are technical and complex questions answered by the team, but there was an ordinary or overarching statement made by all of the members on the IT approach. We must remember that there is an outstanding process of amending the law on this one. We hope that happens. We should give better clarity between on the relationship of the head and the minister, because there is that area too many people that we feel is a black area in terms of both the police and IT reporting to the minister. There is a judgment on that. I hope that goes so that it's not a problem. But at the present moment, I never remember, there will be some few things for me as a minister of both. It should be my wish that the IP dealing with the problems of the police, which could be corruption, the overplayed hand and all that, could not just be an impunitive body, could be also a corrective body, and give some guidance to the police of allowing them how better to do their job. That's one. And the other request, Honorable Chair, is the speed that IT is doing with people, so that those police that are found to be on the free side go back to acting quick, because there are not too many of us as the police, especially the investigators. And so sometimes they stuck themselves on the investigation for a long time, and they will take your skills out of the mainstream of investigating the real criminals out there. So that should be the problem. I think on the mainstream of what the IPC is doing now, they are still doing their job, because once science quite some numbers of those people that should be departmentally charged or go to court and all that. So that's another area that one is trying to work hard. That is trying to work hard either with our management to move faster, if we can, if we need a prosecution to move faster with these police cases. As I said, if they found guilty out of 15, if they're not found guilty out of 15, so that they help us going forward. So I whatever the outcome of the new law, I hope the IP will be there to do their job and work with whoever is working with. So this is my overarching response to the overarching statement made by another member of the service. Without specific questions, the first round of the people that applied were 19 one night. So we find it a very shallow pool of the as you look at it, one guy was applied, he said he is an owner of the private security company. So those are kind of people sometimes. He applied, he said, because he has an oversight on this private company, because he has an oversight on the police. So those are kind of people sometimes. And even that 19 is further reduced as you look at that. The second pool is 47. It's pool better, but it says not the pool that you get. It's 47.
Well, the question asked by the honorable member here, I would have loved to cross that bridge when we reach it. We are looking at the 47, we are hopeful and all that, but I'm sure your question is asked in terms of time, if we have time. We believe that by end of March we will have the new head of the, we should be able to start time of 12 months by the law. Indeed, we have loved to, we initially we have put ourselves at the end of October. That's what we have put ourselves on in case it happens, but we don't want to cross the line of the legislature and to start time on the 44. 47, we'll be looking at it, and we believe that we hope so, that it will not have been resolved in the end of the of IT. Thank you.
Excuse me. Honorable members, before you can see that the same picture that we included. Honorable Minister, thank you very much for those responses. May you continue.
Thank you very much, Chatterton. I think before I respond, before I hand over to the new executive director, this is what I want to achieve for honorable members. I want to restore the credibility of ICT, because I want the public to have that confidence to say if a case is reported to ICT, it will be attended to, the complainant will be given feedback, and there will be consequences from that investigation. And for us to do that is to have a credible, independent process of investigating this case. I think it goes back to what you are raising there. And that is why I approach National Treasury, because I felt that if we continue to use our own internal people, there will always be this cloud here, which is that you might have covered up, you might have not done a proper job, which is why it's important that you have somebody from outside who comes in and look at the process to say whether the case is closed properly or not. And I believe that it's that report then that will help us in terms of restoring that confidence, because we'll be able to implement corrective measures internally so that the public can regain that trust in IP to say, you know, IP will investigate the cases that are reported to it. So that is why we approach National Treasury, because like I said, they've got a team of forensic investigators. So what we are going to discuss once they give us the letter is to say how many will be required from them based on the amount of work that needs to be done. And the extension that we requested, the honorable members, was until the end of this financial year. Because based on what the team said, that they can be able, if they get four additional capacities, they can finalize the outstanding 1,000 cases before the end of the financial year. So that is the indication that I got from the team. But we'll have that discussion with the team from National Treasury to say this is the amount of work that is done. Can we then decide on the number of investigators that can come and assist us? Because when I come here, honorable members, I want to come with a report that has been compiled by independent investigators that say this is what happened in IPC. And then I can be able to say that this is what we are going to do to make sure that this never happens again in IPC. To respond to individual questions, I think I will allow Mr. Soka to deal with some of the questions, and then I will turn to the remaining ones.
Thank you, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members, and Honorable Minister. I'll deal mostly with questions that particularly relate to my area of responsibility. Maybe I need to put this in context in terms of this issue of the state of failure. And also when we look at the slide 11 that deals with what has been preliminary found to be the issue. Now, we have indicated in slide 3 what this issue of special closure is. And let me explain. The special closure is not in our policy environment, in any of our counterterrorism procedures. But it was basically a system process. So when you go, when you conduct an investigation, conduct an investigation on the topic, but you have to go to the system and base the investigation that you conducted, which will ultimately then allow you to complete an investigation and close that case when it's due for closure. More the same as the SAPS, we have a docket, but we also have a CAS system where they update information up until it's finalized. So we have a similar. Now, in IT system, there are cases where when you conduct an investigation, you find that based on your investigation, for instance, maybe you find that there is no member that is involved in any alleged offense. So you cannot, therefore, continue that investigation. You need to refer it to an appropriate institution, maybe, for instance, the SAPS. So therefore, you will not make a recommendation to the SAPS or to the NPA on that specific matter. So the system process on special code, it was termed special closure because it's not a normal process where after you conduct an investigation, you refer that investigation to the NPA or to the SAPS for the small process or a general reason the member concern. So that process in the system was supposed to be done. So when this thing came up, what we found was that, and that's part of the preliminary finding, is that process of a special closure was then abused to then pass off some of the cases which are not supposed to go through that process but go through a normal process, so as if they are special closure cases. Hence, on that slide level, issue 11 indicates that preliminary findings are that the cases for instance are closed without a technical report or that investigations that were conducted by SAPS is passed on even from IPT investigations. So when our standard operating procedure is very clear, for instance, in this situation where SAPS has conducted an investigation, ICIS cannot just accept that as an investigation because it's not an independent investigation by ICIS. So therefore, ICIS must still go and where there are statements, approach those witnesses, reobtain statements to confirm that what they've deposed in the docket that has been obtained by the ACPS is actually true. So that's what happened. But when now you want to complete that investigation as if it was done by ICIS, then that becomes a problem. Then that's an issue. One of you might have asked, what is the process now? Now, what I'm trying to explain now is that was the system problem. But when we realized that there was that kind of abuse, then we went back to the system and how do we enhance the system so that it does not make it possible for that kind of a special program. But also, because of our own environment and the terminology that we're using, and the fact that we also have quite a number of our investigators who come from a police environment, then we also change our terminology in terms of policy, so that it sort of mirrors those of the police. For instance, we didn't have undetected in our environment, which is a normal terminology that is used in the police, where there's no the investigation cannot identify who the suspect is or the suspect is unknown and so forth, then it is then closed as undetected. Those cases are not referred to the NPA, for instance, because what will you be asking the NPA to decide? Oh, if you don't know who the suspect is. So then we adopted that in the new police environment to say, rather than closing that investigation in our previous environment as unsubstantiated, then you then say it's undetected, you know. So those are kind of policy and system changes that we implemented to make sure that those those kind of situations not occur again. And it has actually worked because the system is now stricter in terms of how the investigators go through the process of completion and closure of cases. Honorable Lucian also asked, and I think it's linked to your question, and you also asked whether there was an investigation on decision making cases, and it's linked to a question on decision making and special program, the distinction between the two. So I think my earlier input deals more on what the special closure really is. With regard to the decision ready, and I think I also made a point last time on my PhD, at IPIS, when the AGSA conducts audits on IPIS, they also conduct audits on dockets. So they because we will then report in our annual report and say we have completed so many cases as decision rate. Now that is performance information. The Auditor General then will come to maintain what is your process of investigation and completion of investigation. We will put the standard operating procedure of IPIS and say this is how each investigator is supposed to conduct an investigation. This is what we call a quality investigation, and that is the process up to the decision making process. Now, the Auditor General, when they go to the provinces, they will then look at the docket and juxtapose that with our own standard operating procedures to say, did the investigators follow that? To an extent that we, as Auditor General, can assure ourselves that what IPIS is reporting as decision ready, if it's 5,000 cases or 2,000 cases, those cases were actually decision ready. Now, that is how then they audit our cases. Not only that, but also our internal audit, they also do that kind of audit in our provinces to check if those cases were actually decision ready in line with our standard operating procedures. And so too, in my own environment, we do our own inspections to check that there is compliance with the standard operating procedures. So, when you find an annual report, that then confirms our performance information in relation to decision ready cases. It means the Auditor General is satisfied that based on the dockets that they looked at, the investigations that we conducted, and to conclude that it's decision ready is in line with the policy that we have done for. So that is the assurance that I can give you in relation to the decision ready cases. And where the Auditor General says, I don't believe this is decision ready because maybe there's no technical report or anything like that. That case will not make it into the case that we report as decision ready. So it will then be excluded, and we will then go to see if it is true that it is not in the decision ready, and then that will be reinvestigated. And in relation to these cases that have already been identified, the instruction was taken from when this thing came out. So all those cases where they were closed as a special process, provinces will have to look at them and make sure that where proper investigation are not conducted, proper investigation is done. I must hasten also to indicate that even within the cases that are identified here as 1,000, not all of them were necessarily ready. So there were cases that were closed and completed properly in line with policy. And there are those that were not done in line with policy. So when the final report comes to the committee, then the committee will then get an actual breakdown in terms of out of all these cases, which one we identify as having been closed and completed irregularly and not in compliance with our standard of operating procedure, and which ones were done properly? The report will then disclose. There was a question whether how is it possible that a case would be closed without a technical report. Those are the anomalies that we found, because we cannot close the case without a technical report, because if the investigation is not done without that technical report. It is, however, possible to make a disciplinary recommendation to the SAPS without a technical report. But that case, it does not mean it is decision ready in line with our standard operating procedure. So you might find that an investigation says, for you to conclude it, you still need a toxicology report. But from that investigation, you can still already establish that there was a misconduct that was committed by a member of the police. And then you can be able to do a recommendation to the police in relation to that. But in relation to technical reports, and we find that there was no technical report, but the case is closed, that shouldn't be. So that investigation is not complete. So these are the issues that the final report will also deal with. The complexity and the technical nature of the investigation, I think it's important that we understand that the investigation is done from an interdisciplinary unit within IP, which is completely divorced from my area of responsibility, which is investigation, because you want to give that kind of independence, even if it's internal, so that the investigation component of the organization does not get involved in that investigation, to give it that kind of independence. So they have then to look at each and every dotted and look at the investigation that was conducted and juxtapose that with our own standard operating procedures to say where they followed as they should have been, and then make a determination based on that. And that is the technical part of it that they need to look at. And that is why you see from the presentation, say the unit will from time to time also consult with you. So for instance, where they don't understand some specific aspect of our processes, then they will consult with me to say what should have happened here, you know, and then I will then, based on our policy, explain what should have happened, and then they will make a determination if there was any wrongdoing on the part of the investigator or not. It is true that all our investigations go through management. So before it is concluded, the provincial management must sign off on it. Not an investigator that must sign off on it. And that is why you will see that they say one of the members had resigned when he was confronted with this. That was one of the managers who was supposed to make sure that process were properly followed and concluded, you know. And the member who was dismissed was also acting more in fashion of this and acting in contravention of our standard of procedure. So
but
that is what happened.
I think we need to begin to expand on the
Yeah, thank you, Chair. I think I've covered most of the area of relevance.
Any further issues?
Yes, Chair. There were two last questions that were asked to say why didn't we request, for example, National Treasury to assist when I started to act. At that time, when I started to act, the feedback I got from the team was that they were going to be able to finalize the cases. It's only when I informed them that we have to come and present to the scholar committee that they indicated that they will need additional capacity. And then the other one was to say, was there any complaints that they brought to my attention vis-a-vis relating to interference, refusal to submit the file? The only complaint that had brought to my attention was in the Free State, where they couldn't find some of the files that were subject of the investigation. So we did engage the provincial agency to make those available. And then the other case was in Southern, but that one happened before my time, where the then acting provincial head then refused to cooperate with the investigation team. So he refused to submit an affidavit to the team to allow them to finalize the investigation. So those are the two cases that were brought to my attention. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Before we take another round of questions, Mr. Bakwan, I noted you. My apologies for keeping you waiting. If you could just be patient, you will be, and your item is next on the agenda.
No problem, Jeff.
Mr. Bakwan is the first in the position to come to speak of policy. Could I take another round of questions on the board? Let's do the Blanche and then Shombeni and Pico.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and thank you for the responses. I just wanted to make a comment, Chair, and perhaps if it's something the Minister would like to respond to, it would be appreciated. The IFED Amendment Bill, which was dealt with by the Fifth Parliament, has now gone to the President, if I'm not mistaken. HFP has dealt with that, so that should clarify any concerns and issues and make the process regarding the removal of the IFED head clearer. And I was just wondering, Chair, I mean, you know, the removal of the IFED head is one end of the process, and the amendment seeks to empower Parliament to play a more proactive oversight role in that process. But the amendment bill fails to deal with the appointment of the IFED. And I put the question to the Minister regarding whether he could just enlighten the committee about transparency, given the important accountability role that the IFED head plays. And I think generally as a comment, it would be that this committee consider an amendment to that bill regarding the appointment process of the IFED head, and not just the removal of the IFED head. Whether we could look into that. I know that the Secretary of the Police is here, and it may be something that the Civilian Secretariat and the Committee could look at together. And then just with respect to the outstanding question, whether the Minister is satisfied that the process is sufficiently transparent, and I mean, I think that's why it's very important that he was here today, just to reassure everybody that the process does intend to conclude within the legal time frame, and he's also enlightened us as to some of the frustrations that he's experienced. But the final constitution of that selection panel, will that be communicated? Will we be brought into the loop to ensure that there are no question marks when this process is dealt with? The media and the public at large are anxious and somewhat suspicious, given the issues around IFED. I think this presents a unique opportunity for us to strengthen the arm of IFED, but at the same time reassure the public that the appointment of that head will be done based on the merits and nothing else. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable
Member. Chair, thank you. I only have a few possible items for my. I certainly don't intend to enter into a debate with the people on the other side of the table. First thing that I want to say, you know, obviously we cannot come here and come and tell people that we have a system problem and that the system is the cause of certain things that we see now, that we experience. You know, the system, information on the system, you know, it's obviously captured by individuals and based on decisions that were taken and steps that were taken. So we must take responsibility for what is captured, you know, in our system. You know, so really, you know, the system issue really, as far as I'm concerned, doesn't carry water. We need to ensure that the decisions that we take and what is going to be captured there is the real thing. That is the first thing that I want to say. Secondly, Chairperson, the issue of the Auditor General. The Auditor General is not
an experienced investigator. Not maybe even a person that got a legal background. The Auditor General will only determine whether certain steps have been taken. So that doesn't give me any confidence that the investigation was properly conducted and finalized. So that is the second thing that I want to put on the table. Chairperson, and then lastly, you also told now that the provinces were told to look into this issue. And while it's good that they can do, you know, maybe quite the bulk of the work, we need an independent investigation. Because at the moment, you know, the questions are still out there, are these cases really properly investigated? You know, there are a lot of people waiting for justice to be done. So, Chairperson, that is my observation, and our last thing, Chairperson. I think we have a problem also with what we call in the police, used to call when I was there, and that is certainly the case. I know the minister very well. Command and control. We need an issue of command and control. And maybe the reason is, Chairperson, because the position is vacant. And we need to fill that position. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much. Before Honourable Shembeni, I'm noted and I'm going to think about could I also just get an indication of planning to receive responses that the people are acting on a regular basis?
Chairperson, yes, the provinces are required to provide feedback. They do. Some of them, they don't provide that. Raised during our meeting to say they need to provide. But in terms of the request for the process, is that they need to provide regular feedback to the complainant in terms of the status of the case.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. It's only to find out, I think, if any instances whereby you struggle to get affidavits or statements from indicated members. If yes, then what to do? Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Mine would be to ask the head of IPD mentioned that you only find out when you are supposed to come and report to the committee that there seemed to be a lack of human or a shortage of human body in the department. That's how I've listened to what you said. Now, if it's in that case, what I want to find out is how regular actually do they get their report for them to see if there's progress or not. And the question that I ask again, I'm going back to it, with regard to the ratio of appointments, because we need to know what will the ratio be to make this problem that are there to be realized. We need to know. They said it's four because we are supposed to come and report to us. But is that four really going to be effective on for you to make sure that when next time you come to report to us, there's progress and success? Thank you, Honorable Kumara. And then the work.
Thank you, Chair. I heard about the let's wait for the final report, but can I ask on the preliminary findings, there was what, 580 files inspected. Can we have the breakdown? Do we have the breakdown on, for instance, the case files closed, what are the three categories, the irregularities identified there on the 580? Do we have those figures? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you.
I was not intending to ask, but if I'm correct, the acting head
of the IP mentioned something like if I'm correct, that the investigator at the IP, some of them are not funded. The second one is that my understanding, I hear people are talking about getting independent investigators, independent investigators. So I'm getting confused that we are talking about IT, which is supposed to be independent. And independent investigator. So that means we must close down the IP. Because if there was no independent investigator. My understanding is that the problem is that there is a shortage of investigators here. And there was an explanation that somewhere there was a manipulation of the system. Not to say that it's not doing it well. So my concept here that we're for the shortage of people that are too, that the process has the process shortage. And so that's the only concern. So that's the only concern. That next time we were also listening that we need to participate that sort of investigating. But I just wanted to say that I hear voices that we need independent investigators. So that means that in this one, who are in the IT are not independent. The independent one is the one who will come from
thank you, Honorable Professor, and the Chair. Thank you, Chair. I think this has covered me on the last part because to me also it raised the question to say why would we need the investigation unit and then we need again specialized individuals outside for investigation. That was my question. Perhaps one of the things was saying that maybe early next year when we open the museum, I could better function. So that head of investigation also raised something which in the last meeting I raised to say that at least as a committee take us into confidence of some of these cases that were saying that they are not in line with policy. But you have a breakdown, but I hear when you are saying that you give us the next year, but one perhaps would have wanted to see that in confidence. Because in the public eye, you think that there's nothing that you are doing, but you do have some other cases that you have completed with, and you will say that you will recommend for disciplinary action, whatever. But one part that the acting head has highlighted, I think also the people have raised it, which I find it very strange that he's saying that because Honorable Kronenberg Carol Blanche asked why do you need extra staff members when did you discover that you need extra, he's saying that maybe I'm quoting you correctly, but you must correct me, that I only discovered when you're coming here, maybe I don't know. But the fact of the matter is because you are given, I don't know what since when are you actually going to say? Since when? So that we prioritize and we look at human capital and all these other issues that are outstanding or that are needed.
So,
Chair, on page 13, there's an issue of computing priorities. Perhaps if that, I think it's B on page 7, computing priorities, if that maybe can be explained to us. Thank you, Chair.
Okay. Thank you. The last question will be thank you, Chair. It's not a question, but an observation. My observation would be some of the members were alluding there is it still important for us to have IT. But with my observation, I would say, Chair, IPED was established with good intention, hence it is there. And we believe that the shortcomings that are there, you expect the shortcomings in any institution to be there. What we need to do, I think, is only to find ways and means of how to assist to make IPED a success. And I believe that we can be, I would really differ that if we are saying, if you are questioning as this committee the status of IPT, of which I believe it's there, it's good, it's only challenges that are there, and hence you've come here with even solutions on how would be best for you to assist for IPT to be a success. So I only wanted to put that statement, Chair. Thank you.
Chairperson, let me just explain this thing of, as far as I understand, this independence. I think the IP is there, must be there, must be independent where they are. I think this case of independent chief is because of the internal investigation. So there it comes in to say you can't investigate yourself, but overall they are there, everybody gets the same side. Though I agree that we still have to improve the capacity in the corridor. But this one, because the allocation is against themselves, it's like you go investigate yourself. And this element of inbound will give a better integrity out on the outcome. So I think that's the other number is, I think, is coming with a broad problem statement that could be debated and discussed for a very long time. I hope you don't bring it in the house one day. You see, we have this item that most of us we are part of creation. Part of creation and belief. Indeed, so there is a structure in the institution, and there will be individuals that will come and go within the institution. I'll just make a statement. You know, there are laws that were made because Mandela was the president, and we thought that Mandela was before apartheid. And then when things changed, you realize that we should have done that, we should have done that in the past. So I would like us to look at the institution and cut off individuals. Looks like we agree that this institution is here and must stay in the correct institution. Now, for the institution to work best, you need to get the best individuals to run the institution. That's the question we are raising. The best we have at the present moment is the law. The best we have as a process of creating an individual there is the law. Hence, you say we need to be transparent. We can't be transparent beyond the law. We'll be breaking the law if we're more transparent than what the law says we must be. So we need to stick with the law. And the law says you shall do this, you will advertise, you will put what you need out of it, there's a process, you will put the panel will be ministered, checked by the Minister of Police, you invite, and all that. So, the problem starts when you don't do that. So, at the present moment, we're doing just that. So, until the law changes, we'll be transparent by keeping what the law has given us there to do maybe your last suggestion to say it has been on the exit of the head of the IP. Maybe the entrance also, the Lord needs to look at it, and whoever is incumbent in the time, and whoever is responsible will have to start to follow the law. We are asking to be allowed to follow the law and check us, have you followed the law? We believe we are following the law in getting the best woman or man to woman or man, and I guess South African, to run the important institution. I sometimes I know this is a portfolio committee of the South African Police Service, dealing with the service. Sometimes I just feel there is this emphasis on the Ronald Street, but I work with the police. I get work with them, I understand them, and sometimes they get unfestig. They get unfestig. I hope one day there will be oversight of the chain, rather than one segment of the I was reading the report that I think since 2014, 50 magistrates have been arrested. Magistrates. But nobody speaks about it. They speak about just one police that gay. So I just hope that one day there's an oversight on the chain. You know, I work with these police. They get frustrated. They get frustrated with these police. And I get frustrated with them. Since last year, we had a high spate of cash hikes in this country. And these police did this excellent job, arrested many of them. 232 of them are on bail. These cash hikes are on bail. Plus 15 bombers. They're all on base. So, it's not the police that give base. And speaking with this police, they say, Minister, sometimes you meet this guy on the street as an investigator, we're not told that the guy is already on base. The lawyers of these guys and the prosecutors, they meet minus the investigator and grant the bail. It's a person that has been not once, not twice, not thrice on cash line with the AK, with everything, sometimes people dying in those operations, but they're on bail. I just wish and I hope one day they will create the oversight on the whole chain. Remember yesterday, I think the NDPP that sent the police for arresting somebody who killed this young lady. Yes. That young guy that was killed by together with the friends, was killed by a parolee. And sometimes you're not there to hear about this parolee. And that point, that person, after killing that young girl who was in Mr. West University, he's arrested after his rape, after his kill again. And he's a family. 4 weeks ago, four people killed, a 10-year-old, two 12s, and the aunt, were killed by Caroline. So, and everybody is asking, where are the police? What are the police doing? Sometimes we get frustrated. So, maybe as the police portfolio, I have suggested before, just for the release of all the chain of the just chain, sit down and we all talk and we work from A, point A until the correctional service at the end of the day, prosecutors, magistrates, and all that. You sit back and you say to yourself, let me have chop stories. But for us to come back to you, let us keep the law and then check us on the law. If we feel maybe not adequate, let's work on the law and go ahead and come in for the law. Thanks.
Honourable Minister, in response to your concerns which we share, we'll be requesting an urgent peace and security or peace and stability cluster early next year. The committee has consistently been asking that we bring the Department of Justice, I have a long list of members of state security. So when you in that cabinet subcommittee, I think we can also raise the matter that the research joint oversight. It is a matter which the committee is passionate about. Before we take further comments,
Honourable Kumar. Thank you, Chair. May I say on what the Honourable Minister has just said? The committee will remember, Chairperson, with the BRRR reports, that the Honourable Minister, I know, was not there, but the Deputy Minister, he was there. I specifically said that we as a fraternity on police will have to ensure that we assist the police services, and I specifically referred to the criminal justice system. And we said, part of the problem is justice, the other side, correctional services. And I can say to the Honourable Minister, the committee agreed that we as a committee will ensure that we take the hands of the police services to see how and what we can do to enhance crime fighting in South Africa. So I just want to say to the Honourable Minister that this committee is committed to ensure that we fight crime together in South Africa, because crime becomes such a problem that it affects everybody. So you can be assured that we will support the police services. That doesn't mean that we will not criticize, but we must see it in that perspective. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Minister. Do you have further comments you'd like to make? We're looking to comment. Thank you, Minister.
Thanks, Chair. Most of the follow-up questions, it was mainly comments, but I want to touch on the one that the Honourable Chairman said, they will touch on another question. I fully agree with you. I think that's why, in fact, the dispensing unit was established, because they are investigators and they can be able to pick up, you know, where the proper investigation was not done. And the issue of capacity in terms of our integrity strengthening, we are in the process of creating both in that unit. We got additional funding from SAP, I think it was in 2017, and one of the services was to help strengthen this unit. So that process is still ongoing. We are having discussion with the Department of Public Service and Administration to create those positions for us, so that we've got enough capacity that's going to be able to inspect the project and be able to identify any gaps and irregularities. So that process is ongoing. So that's what I want to highlight.
Thank you very much, Honourable Member. Just another matter, Honourable Minister, that the legal opinion that we have, and I thought this legal opinion, is based on another matter on the firearm amnesty. Is that the final notice of the amnesty will be published by the minister. And that the minister there's no need for it to be referred back to the committee. You could give it to the committee as a courtesy for members of people noting people. So sending the committee the final notice would give
the committee its closure on the matter and final oversight. And then from there, we will conduct regular oversight meetings and site visits, hopefully, regarding the end. Are we at the same station?
Yes. Yes, because we are. But we put it upon ourselves, Ministry of the Police Frontier. We have been wrong updating the portfolio of police frontier. I know that there are some potholes on the matter going forward. Basically, to try to find one of the ways of reducing the firearms that are in the circulation. We're doing that. Chair, again, deviating. I was quite impressed about the good work that is done by the South African Police Service in the country. Last weekend alone, they found 36 illegal firearms over the weekend, which means there are a lot of them that are there. Though I know, especially the Honourable Member of the Parliament, has some issues, but we don't have problem dealing with the individuals sticking with the law. But generally, the members, one problem they have, they say the illegal firearms don't come back. They're illegal. I think I can bring some figures. They do come back. So, and one area, Chairperson, unfortunately, no way we can do without is the checking of the firearms that are brought back. So, because some people feel that if those firearms could not be checked, maybe many of them in fact can come back. No way. Because we have to check when it was illegal and was in your head, what happened? Who shot someone? So it might be the gun that you're bringing back, but it shot somebody. So it's a difficult area. If we had the way we would have said, just bring them back, but which means we would not have resolved and solved some cases of murder that are out there. It's a chicken and egg, the cash capital situation, but we can't do otherwise of not checking the firearms. To submit your illegal firearm, we have to check it so that we keep South African safe. But reporting back, maybe it's a 6 months, maybe quarter of 6, we can see how far we cover the ground and all that, mobilizing other communities and to work together on this matter. The ultimate, we are preparing, we are gearing ourselves, but when this time ends, we are gearing ourselves to the South African Police to be hard on finding these illegal firearms. We'll be doing these searches and we'll be doing these operations. But as this goes, we want to be very hard in trying to work with South African people. But the processes that put us where we can begin, I guess.
Honourable members, I'm not going to open up any discussions. We'll be having regular oversight meetings on the matter of firearm amnesty. And thank you very much for your willingness to report regularly to the committee on the matter. Honourable Minister, if we do meet before, because we are always mindful of your time, and thank you for always being available. As a committee, could you please convey our condolences to the family of the Chief of Staff for the passing away of another, Don Kululeko, lost her mother, sadly lost her mother in the early hours of the morning. And then, Honourable Minister, we'd also like to thank you for Mr. Valen Basson, right there behind. Mr. Basson, could you just stand so that the members can see? It has been brought to our attention that Mr. Basson is dying.
So, as the director of strategy in the civilian secretariat, he has really been exemplary in the assistance he has given to the committee. Service for about 23 years. It worked in the secretariat in the Western Cape, the Eastern Cape, and at national. I have a bias because I know him as we studied together at the University of the Western Cape in the 80s. I don't want to expose our age, but he is older than me, so I am. I'm not at retirement age. He's taking early retirement, and I'm not happy with that. So what we did at UWC in the 80s, Minister, you can just imagine. It was students in the student movement, Minister. He managed to complete his studies. Some of us, we were kicked out, we couldn't continue our studies. We had to come back in the 90s to complete our studies. So, Mr. Basson, he was 10 years director for strategic management at the Civilian Secretariat. I think the committee, on behalf of the committee, the minister, but on behalf of the committee minister, ran an exemplary civil servant in Mr. Basson. And we thank you for the work you have done for this committee. I do think he deserves a warm round of applause. And please, now that you go working, continue now the journey. Godspeed. And enjoy what's your next endeavor and your next challenge. Thank you very much.
Minister, on that note, the yes, of the
Minister, there was a petition which was dated the 7th of July, and the Speaker's office has followed up on the matter, which was received from Mr. Cornelius Basson, not this Basson, Mr. Basson. Mr. Basson, you may say. Thank you very much. In which he complained that, you may sit down now, Mr. Basson, that he and his family have been struggling to find assistance regarding the killing of his son a year ago. The Speaker has referred the matter to this committee for it to deal with from the perspective of its mandate. The Speaker expects a response from this committee, and the committee's response must be tabled in the House in the form of a report. I'm not going to go into the merits and the demerits of the case. We are not investigating the case. We are listening to the complainant and the police. The process and consideration of the petition are governed by the rules. Chapter 14 of the Rules of the National Assembly, Rule 337D makes provision for the Speaker to table written instruments, including special petitions and other petitions of a general nature. 344 makes provision for the form of the petition to be prescribed by the Speaker. In this regard, she may refer the petition to a particular committee, and accordingly she has referred it to the Portfolio Committee of Police. In terms of Rule 322, the Portfolio Committee of Police will listen to the matter. Honourable Members, Honourable Minister, I will allow Mr. Basson, please put the chair to Mr. Basson and say, Mr. Basson, please do not feel uncomfortable. No, it would fit right there, Mr. Basson. We all need to see you. I bet you are let off the hook whilst we allow Mr. Basson an opportunity to speak.
Minister, your team who will listen to Mr. Mukhan will say, the IPEC team, you are excused. I've let you abstain for this matter as well. I would like to introduce you to the Honourable Minister. My name is Tina Jumak-Peterson. I'm the chairperson of the committee. To my right, I'll also the Honourable Member to introduce themselves to record purposes.
Honourable Mahathir, the Minister of the Committee.
Mr. Gassan, you must switch off your mic and keep it on. Thank you, Nick. My name is Crystal Sir.
My name is Bobo Shatakri.
Good morning, Mr. Basson. My name is Andrew Whitfield.
Morning, Mr. Basson. I'm Peter Blanche.
Good morning, Mr. Basson. I'm Andrew Shandor.
Good morning, Mr. Basson. I'm Petra Shatakok, member of the committee.
Morgen, ek is Pieter Groenewald.
Morgen, u mag maar praten in Afrikaans of in Engels. Honourable Minister.
Well, my name is Jehovah Kempel, Minister of Police, Legal and Community. The General is with the Minister, and I'm sure that the little people from me are expected to show that
morning, Chairperson. Morning, Minister. This morning, Mr. Mukhan, Lieutenant General of the City, the Divisional Commander.
Honorable Chair, Honorable Member, Lieutenant General of the City, and the Acting Provincial Commissioner.
Good morning, Chairperson. Good morning, Minister. Good morning, Mr. Basson. Honorable members, I am Major General Deary. I'm Deputy Provincial Commissioner responsible for the section. The West.
Good morning, Colonel Spain, Parliamentary Line.
Good morning, sir. I'm Lieutenant Colonel Kinnear. I'm from the anti gang leader in the West.
Good morning. My name is Arvin Muzarape, Secretary of Police.
Good morning, Grunewald, and good morning to each and everyone. Special welcome also to the, our esteemed Minister of Police. I'm privileged to have you today. Chairperson in the committee, if I can just ask, you know, if you can be flexible in this regard. If it's okay with the house, I don't want to be out of order. If my wife can maybe sit next to me so that I don't feel like I'm sitting on an island, you know, so in case, I'm not sure what the rules is, if she can also contribute, you know, in case I forget something.
Say, mag your hand vasten.
You could bring whoever you like.
Especially the one.
Yeah.
Do you have any other members you'd like to go? Please, this is not the fourth year. So feel comfortable. If you would like some coffee, they can give it to you. Some tea. Feel comfortable.
Thank you, Chairperson. And thank you for the committee for this opportunity. And thank you also for the Minister for their time. Chairperson, yes, it's with a heavy heart that I'm actually sitting here, that tomorrow is precisely 16 months that my younger son, I am the father of four children, tomorrow the time when we go to the grave on the 28th every month to plant the cemetery. Allow me to just briefly say why I feel, in a minute, just to say more about myself and why I feel that I am at the moment a stepchild of the Republic of South Africa. I'll be very, very quick. I started my activist teeth with Clothing Workers Union, a rival union to the clothing and textile union in the United States, under the leadership of the late Johnny Issel, Shirley Gunn. Then, when I started work at the University of Cape Town, I was shop steward for, which was first the TNG, which is the Transport and General Workers Union, which later became Nehawu. I was also involved in negotiations there and that. I then also became then the treasurer of our local interfere clinic health committee. I was on the first, what was first the ward forums, I think, which is now the ward committee. I was a participant in both. I was then also in one of the initiators with my with our then councillor Norman Giantis of Meldale Community Forum in Interfere, which was one of the ones that started it. And then also I then was at my children's primary school, the chairperson of the school governing body there. I then was then, when I went to high school, I then became the chairperson of the school governing body at Portland High as well. Then also, and I know it's a multi-party committee, but then also I was, just lastly, that I was then also the chairperson of the ANC branch in Interfere. Was. And then also then, at the moment, I'm only now the chairperson of the Church Men's Society of the Anglican Church in Interfere. And I'm not saying it because I want to boast or what, but because I just felt, you know, having put in so much, you know, I'm not complaining, but I'm just feeling, you know, that what I get in return, you know, as a law abiding student, as you heard, I was never in jail or whatever. My wife also became part of the community activities. Now, on the 28th of July last year, our life as a family was dramatically and permanently changed. Now, I've got here two sheets of paper where I put down the dates in each and every activity that I did from the time of my son's passing, interacting with some of the esteemed colleagues that I've heard by name and that I know also by face here. I've interacted with, up until now recently, I think Captain Colin Stein. And please forgive me if I got the titles wrong. It's not for lack of respect, but it's not, you know, sometimes I don't know if it's Major General or Mary or the Lieutenant Colonel, Colonel, or whatever. So yeah, that's another letter. So I can go through each and every one. As you can see, it's two whole pages. But just quickly, let me, for half a minute, I can talk a lot about my son. I wanted to bring the other poster, but this is my son, a very handsome young boy. As handsome as his daddy. He's my mini-me, my lookalike, you know. So, as his father is a son of the soil, he was also a son of the soil. A son that every parent would be very, very proud of. And it's no surprise to us that he lost his life by being a hero to people, saving people that he didn't even know. So for us, it is, he is a staunch Man United supporter, and that is why at his funeral, it was a very heavy Man United theme. He was 19 years old. He died 2 weeks before his 20th birthday. He just matriculated the year before, 2017, at Portland High, with distinction. So it is his whole life in ahead of him, his whole career in front of him. It was just starting with a job, because we allowed him to have this gap year, and he started with this job for 4 days. And then that night, this criminal element came, and they came and disrupted our life forever. What makes it worse for us is that on a daily basis we have to go through trauma again and again. I feel personally that I have aged 10 years, you know. Sometimes I'm thinking I'm not going to make it. Of course, as a parent, you know, you feel that, you know, and you think that, you know, you're going to go before your child or your children. I've also touched now the high blood and those and things, you know, so naturally one was thinking, you know, that you would go first. And not this bright young man. And only now, on a daily basis, we are astounded by the impact that he made in people's lives. You know, a true, true hero. Indeed, his sister is asking, you know, why did he have to be a hero? Why? We're asking, you know, that, was this boy even real? Was he an angel on earth? But nevertheless, let me come back to that. I'm not going to go to each and every item on this two pages. But just suffice to say that from the 14th of the 8th of 2018.
Sorry for interrupting you, we have all the compassion to you. That is why we call on that our Lord meeting, and the minister is here. So, yes, we would like you to please, we want to listen to the passionate story about your boy. But we want justice to you. So try and give us as much information. This is your, this is an opportunity that you have. You will never get so many senior people, including the minister, in one room, all the communities. So I pray and beg that you give us as much information so that we can find closure, so that you and your family can find closure. And we can assist in finding justice for your son. So try to focus on the faith so that we can familiarize ourselves with the content of the faith. So you need your time while special. Please, I don't want to ma'am, we know that you are emotional, it's a difficult time for you, but it is our sincere wish and prayer for your family that you coming to this committee will give you some form of consolation that you're offering for you. Thank you. You may continue.
My son, on that particular night, my son attended this 21st birthday party. He was invited, he didn't know the people there. After the party is finished by the early hours of 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock in the morning, they around. They were busy still chatting outside on the pavement of a particular house, a street that he normally doesn't go to close by. Then a white golfy with yellow number plates came past and asked the guys on the pavement if they had belonged to a gang. And obviously the guys, they say no. They left then, made a circle, came back. And my son was then the first one to show that this is a rented car. And this time, they recognized one of the house occupants who was leaning over the vibrate fence as one of the rival gang. So my son began to push people inside the house. They ran into this yard, into this house, and he began to push people in. When he turned around, he was then the last one with this girl, the girl that told you on. And they already began to shoot the people as they were running inside the house, running inside the house. So he then ran to this girl and got hold of this girl, and as they shot him the first shot through the head, he fell down on this girl and he covered her with his body. He's a very slender guy, but he covered her with his body and make sure that she came out unscathed and unhurt. She said she could feel the vibration of the bullets going into his body and his eyes widening. My son frustrated them that night because they came and wanted to kill the old people in the old house because of the rival gangster staying in the house. Then one of the cars that was found was on the opposite side of the pavement, screeching tires went away, and then they were chasing in this car and then shooting on this car. That allowed that girl then to push my son off her and then ran home. One of the guys we were also looking for was jumping in the dirt bin, the big dirt bin. One of the children came to our house and shouting to us. We were laying and we heard all the shots, and we thought, because we're standing next to the Lindsay police station, and we thought that if we hear the shots, where is the police, because we couldn't hear any sirens. They came and then they shouted there by our house to say that they ran into the wrong house. And my son, he's not a gangster. He was just there that night at the wrong place at the wrong time, doing what he does best to save people. So that in a nutshell, as we came to that house, the first thing that actually upset my wife was that the investigation officer was on the scene, because when he got there, my son was already dead. And what upset her is that he said then to us, first to her and then to me, that you must know that without witnesses, there's no case. We just feel at the time, you know, that the timings are the right and appropriate at the time. And that's how he died that night. Because we could see that 2 weeks after the incident, the owner of the house had to go to the local police station to go tell them there's still bullet casings in my couches, in my window along the walls, and especially the couches. Please come and remove it if you want. So that again gave us then the understanding, you know, that my son's case is not being treated, you know, with the importance it deserves because of the lack of witnesses. His witnesses are the witnesses afraid. 2 weeks after that was his 20th birthday. We decided then to march with the community from our house to the place where he was killed. We got there. We then collected petitions for signatures, a lot of signatures of the community around. We then petitioned the Lentefe police station, which then referred to the Mitchell Plain police station, the cluster. Brigadier Swallow came out, and she then received the petition. The petition had demands on it. But lo and behold, up until today, not one of the demands on the petition was met. But nevertheless, because at that stage we also thought, you know, we're not going to fight just for our son, but for others as well. So that is the petition at that stage. I then decided to proceed to do the correct thing, and then write emails, letters, step by step, from the local Lentefe police station, then to the cluster, then to the Lentefe CID, the Mitchell Spring cluster, and every time there's no response. At one stage we had with our sector commander, we had a meeting in our road with a station commander of Lentefe police station at that stage. It was about nearly a month after that. The station commander, Brigadier Herman Seals, I think, who is now, I think, retired from retirement. Nothing happened after that. We also had the CPF there at that particular meeting. I then began to write letters to the provincial office. Lorraine Verlander, which I think is the PA of Mr. Vieri, Major General Vieri. I wrote letters to Lieutenant Colonel Kenya, I think. I'm just saying about the titles. And then also to the head of the AGU, Mr. Under Lincoln, that's the right, yeah. And every time, I'm just not emailing them, but also the office of the staff, you know, the different staff members. You see, from that time, from the 14th of the 8th of the 18th, when we made the march, 3 months down the line, we received from Mr. J.N. Jacobs, the Office of the Provincial Commissioner, that they have received my request for intervention. I then, when I was still, still silent, I then emailed the Western Cape DPC management. I then also emailed Captain Williams, Colonel Sutherland, the head of detectives, and the head of the AGU. I then also to M. Laurenton, the Rain Verlander, and then I also then there's no still after many weeks, I then emailed Commissioner Jula, the provincial commissioner. He was the provincial commissioner at that stage of the Western Cape. And precisely 3 months after that, on the 11th of the 11th, Lieutenant Colonel Jula then sent Brigadier Vijay Kele, same surname like our Honorable Minister, he sent him to our house. He then took another statement from us. The good thing that he did was that he then went to the local Lentige police station and he got my son's docket away from the Lentige police station. And then he handed it over to the anti-gang unit. He was so relieved because, you know, the anti-gang unit was now the, you know, the power house. And lo and behold, he was so disappointed, you know, that despite numerous attempts to the anti-gang unit, the head of detectives, the province, and the anti-gang unit, you know, nothing was forthcoming. I then proceeded, decided to go to the National Deputy Police Commissioner's office. I sent police for Yark to that office. Nothing came from that. I then sent also then from that time to the National Police Minister's office. Again, I don't know the title, Sally the Bear and others in the office. After that, I had nothing from them. I decided to do other means, and I went to the ENCA to ask maybe if they can assist, you know, by profiling this case on national television and Crime Watch, which is, I think, done by Yusuf Abrangi, investigative journalist. Then, on the 28th of the 3rd of 2019, Dr. Kele came to us, and he was actually also perplexed, you know, as to that he doesn't get the buy-in from the top guys. And I said to him, but use your rank, because I could see he was also frustrated, and he said, there's nothing you can do anymore. I said, use your rank as a brigadier, but he then says, no, but the head of AGU rank, they are actually, their rank is actually higher. I then went to a community meeting at Portland Indoor Center in the hope of getting President Ramaphosa when he was here on a community visit. There were so many people that talked and I couldn't get a chance to talk. I then was unsuccessful and I sent a mail letter to the ANC presidency as well as the ANC top five. I only get a letter back from the office of Mr. Gwere Mentash because the address was wrong. On the 2nd of the 6th, 2019, I sent emails to Mr. Cameron Dagmar, who became then the leader of the official opposition, who promised me that he was at this national visa and he's going to try and speak to the National Minister of Police. He tried for 2 or 3 days to assist me, but then I had nothing again. I sent to Mr. F. Birkman also, a letter who was, I think at that stage, the portfolio committee chairperson of the police. I think he was incumbent for you. I sent you the provincial secretary Saeed Jacobs, because him and Ms. Jessie Duarte was at my house at one stage when they were on a campaign. They came in and then she promised that they will contact the, get the intervention of Minister Kelly to assist. I thought, I'm really feeling under the last stage now, where I repeatedly sent letters to the national presidency and to the national provincial commission, national commissioner's office, as well as to the presidency's office. You know, I also then made a distinction between the ANC president and the president of South Africa to send to both departments. Nothing going forward, and that is when I, on the 25th of the 7th, I then begin to send a mail to the Speaker's office. In the meantime, I also decided to take the matter to the office of the Ombudsman, the police. A person in the office from Mr. Bailey was the person I liaised with. He then, after some time, on the 24th of the 8th of 2019, he then sent the usual response that I always get, maybe after 3 or 5 months, that the case is still ongoing, I then sent letter to Lieutenant Colonel Maharaj, and then repeated it to Noma Inde, Mbengo and Kula. On the 13th of the 10th, we even had an interview with CNN, but that is to all the affected mothers and fathers and his lost children. So I went everywhere, you know, and I felt so frustrated and I felt many times alone. I also lastly liaised with Captain Kotze after the different interventions that I asked from the office of the Speaker that I repeated also at the same time. Now, just to lastly to come to the last stage, which is the detective that was assigned to us. Now, this detective, either he swung with too many cases, but you know, all we ask as a family is sometimes send an SMS. You don't want to every day or every week come and visit us. But I have him only 3 or 4 times at our house, and every time it's like between 4 and 5 months. And then he comes to our house to ask if there's new information that we have. Now all these names of suspects, names of potential witnesses, is what we got. We went out and we got these names. The last time I spoke to the detective was when we decided to reference the agency, seeing that the people is afraid to talk. Let us ask these two guys if they're safe. These gangsters, those gangs, they won't mind to put the other one away for a long time. So I even went and find out their names. Next time they appeared in court, I went to speak to one, and miraculously didn't say anything. The guy that's inside, he's out on bail. A guy that's inside from this particular gang, the detective at least could interrogate him or question him, and then said that he got a diagnosis from him. Now, the last couple of days, and I understand that the detective is because of pressure, I think probably from Captain Kotze then or so, is that for today's meeting and for the patrol committee that we have seen now for the last couple of days, four times the detective phoning us. And we feel important because we feel there's a bit of progress now, you know. He tried to go make an arrest, but this boy, because afterwards he found out that the guy that actually was the shooter, he ran the very first morning of last year, August, July, and up until today he's still somewhere in Brooklyn. Now, our concern was that we felt along this whole period that the AGU was treating my son's case as a cold case, because it feels to us, and I mean we might be wrong there, that we feel that it wasn't their case to begin with, you know, and that is why the importance wasn't given to my son's case as it should have been. there's sometimes when we feel there's selective justice in like the criminal justice system. A case in point is that there's many instances, but a well-known high-profile attorney, and I think that I'm trying to get this off a real pronunciation right, Pete Mihalik, he was the very high-profile detective, as attorney, that usually fought to get gang leaders off. A lot of times he was a case war. Now he was assassinated last year, I think, when he took his children to school. Now obviously when there's an assassination the chance of potential witnesses is very slim. But yet, being seen as he's a high-profile attorney, a day after he was murdered, two guys was arrested. They came like canaries, and then the third one was in 3 days or 2 days after it was arrested. You know, so for us it seems sometimes, you know, where is the equal justice? Like I said, justice delayed. You know, like I said, we never received SMSs or anything, you know, from any of the departments that I've mentioned. Sometimes we feel that when gangsters are being killed, it is quick arrest by the AGU. And we welcome that. But it just, you know, sometimes makes you think, you know, that why is their priority, you know. There was one time where in Woodlands, it's a neighboring suburb, where all of these gangsters was put into a van to go being checked for what you call it, the residue. You know. So these extra measures have been taken. Now I'm asking the detective, why are we not saying that you must bend the law? But we're saying is that why can't you go and get these youngsters, you know, get them to question, because you have the right to question them. Question them and make sure they were correct. Especially this one where we said it was the killer. We heard that it was the killer, you know. Only now we could see the strategy that maybe if they can get him in for questioning, and then one of them is mother can crack. Up until today we haven't received any forensics. We don't know if there's forensics done, you know, can the gun be linked to some other killer, some other murders or whatever. We don't know. So we as a family, we still can't find closure. We try buckets on a daily basis, you know. We are a very close family, we are close to both here and both London family, and for this to happen, I then decided to establish a foundation, my son's name, Chaperson Foundation. It was 1 year past, we had the memorial lecture. We also then marched with other people that was affected, like the Chet Arendt, and also the families went through similar pain. We support them with placard demonstrations for no bail outside court, very religiously. We have every bail appearance or every appearance at court, we support that families and other families. We started marches for them and with other affected families. So, yeah, I always end up my letters by saying, for my son, on my last breath. And I'm hoping that this portfolio committee is going to assist in any way so that I can see justice before I close my eyes. I don't know if you want to add something. Okay? I thank you.
Thank you very much for speaking on behalf of Jack. I'll ask the minister and Andy for their contribution. There are going to be a presentation. Now, you may understand that we do not want to jeopardize the investigation. So we do not want any details from the police that will complicate the case. Because this case is a complicated case. Complex
we want to do
this committee and for the committee.
That we are not just coming here to do our job to sit to speak to all the leaders in Mr. Basson. We are here today to listen to the voice of change. As a mother, as an activist, as a woman of honor, please be assured that we have our support. So I wanted to sit so we can see the briefing. We'll give you a copy of the briefing. Remember that this will not be your first time that you see me. You may not receive SMSs or emails from us, but we will be having regular follow-up once the matter is in place on the agenda of the committee. We ask regular informed on the matter. So your matter is receiving the attention which you have asked me for your son. So today your son is mine. You have to be proud as a father and a mother that you come. So would you like a cup of tea or coffee? You can put the side so that you can see the briefing. So the son, while the police are preparing their response, we admire your tenacity and that you've never given up. You've listened to where you've locked at each and every door. And what you're doing is admirable. We admire your steadfast belief that you will get to the bottom of it. No parent is going through what you've gone through. To your wife as well. I don't think any mother or father should go through what you've gone through. I listened to the presentation from the police.
Honorable Minister. Well, thanks, Chairperson. Thanks to the person and your wife. I didn't know how far you would go in the session. Chairperson, sorry, point of order. Can we just ask someone to ask the people to be quiet outside? Really, we can't hear. I don't think the people can hear what the Honourable Minister says.
No.
Outside.
Yes. There is a queue for food.
You think you won't be silent, sir?
Honorable Minister, we acknowledge your
input. Yeah, I really don't know. Just as you know, the closed committee, it's an open committee. Once it's said here, everybody has the right to write, as you said. There will be a presentation. I'm worried about the sensitivity of the investigation because it's an active investigation as we speak. Another thing, we might not see things as they are put here. And I would not love us to come in public here and say, but that's not so good. I don't know, Chen, how we can handle this one without You see, let me just put one thing, one problem that we are having. Too many people don't want to talk. This is what they mean. Too many people, some people who say, are already gone dead. So in we might find ourselves having spoken openly and reading the paper, even those few people are getting thrown over out of I just don't know. One big problem in Western Cape is to get the even those that you get in the same case, you can't keep them for too long. Even if they are the ship, if they are the protection, so I maybe the committee might help me on this one. Are we not jeopardizing the case that is active? We're not close the case. We're not saying we're stop the case. We understand the family, pain of the family and all that. I hear that the son charges. I'm sure it'll be more heavy that they will resolve the case. But to talk about the case and jeopardize it for me would be a serious one. That should be a serious one. I don't know how to select people to read in papers that the case was discussed. And as I said, some witnesses are dead already. Some witnesses might be praying. Some have refused, as I said, that there are people that some of them have been approached and refused. Some might say, we're out of it. It's a difficult case that we do want to solve and resolve, but I don't know how far we can go in jeopardizing the case and don't reach the final station of the case. The final station of the case is for somebody to be arrested and sent to prison.
Honorable Khulunabao, before I think, Minister, you're absolutely correct. We do not want to jeopardize the case in any matter. We do not want any operational matters or information. I suppose that what is in the presentation is what you are asking presenting to us. And that the Honourable Minister has approved the presentation. So I'm not going to take too many hands. Welcome and we could consider this on the vote of lunch.
Chairperson, thank you. Yes, I agree with the minister. I do agree with the minister. And therefore, I don't think, you know, even getting the presentation will serve much of a purpose. Fact of the matter is, knowing the minister, I think what needs to be done, that is really my recommendation. I read through the documentation, Chairperson, and with all due respect, this is now a presentation that got compiled by the police. And, you know, I can just see that, you know, I can really debate serious, you know, maybe shortcomings, you know, in the presentation, and, you know, questions regarding the investigation. I'm not going to do that. I think what we need to ask the minister and the good police officials here, acting division commissioner, that we compile, right, that is their responsibility, you know, revisit this and maybe could, you know, suffer, and I'm not saying that was about police, I don't know, but that we establish a proper team that can investigate this thing now for once and for all. You know, really, because, you know, I got confused when I read through this. You have some states it's a constable, and then it's somebody else, and then it's this. I'm not saying there's anything wrong with the constable, please. But I think that we need to put a special effort, that is my free chairperson, and that we keep, you know, as you said, we will keep watching this investigation and the progress in this case. That is my contribution. Thank you, chairperson.
Thank you, Honourable Watson, and then Honourable Fox. Chambeni, would you like to speak? No,
thank you very much, Chairperson. Chairperson, I'm in agreement and I would support Honourable Krunewald's proposal. I think it would be possibly unprecedented to elevate such a matter to the first item on this committee's agenda at every sitting of the committee. And I think that hopefully that will assist in clarifying Mr. Besson's feeling that he's a stepchild of the Republic, because that really is something that moved me personally, and I hope that today that you feel like a child of the Republic and not a stepchild, and a citizen whose voice has been heard before this committee of Parliament, and that the proposal to elevate this matter to the top of our agenda at every meeting to receive feedback, I think will go a long way in satisfying one of the key concerns, which I've also raised in this committee, is the lack of correspondence from the South African police. This is a major issue, and I'm sure that the police receive a lot of correspondence, Chair, but when members of Parliament are unable to solicit responses from even the National Police Commission, we must understand that the issue is systemic, and we must take it very, very seriously. I would further recommend, Chairperson, that the Minister compile, if it hasn't been done already, because I see we have a response to the petition, and I'm not going to discuss the merits of that, or whether we even discuss that here, whether that response is for Mr. Besson, but that Mr. Besson should receive some correspondence, some feedback on the matter in writing. I think it would go a long way if it was from the Minister or the appropriate authority. But there is a question around this response that I would like to raise. That is a technicality. It's not a matter that would affect necessarily the investigation. But I would direct the chairperson to the second last paragraph, where the paragraph or the sentence which ends until the matter is finalized, and the following sentence is the matter is regarded as finalized. That the important technicality to clarify in the formal correspondence to Mr. Besson. There's no ambiguity in the matter. The investigation is not finalized. The matter that was referred to the petition is considered as finalized in terms of bringing it to the committee. So I don't want that to become something that is misquoted, misreported, and misrepresented, because that wouldn't be fair. Thank you.
Agree. That we just correct the matter and finalize the matter and regard until the matter is finalized and the matter is regarded as finalized. That is a technicality, Mr. Sensal.
Another thing that I will take on the case.
daily basis you communicate at your training. Daily basis. Maybe that's what you have missed on this one. And you need to correct it. And the chair, he shall be corrected from the ministerial level that you communicate to your colleagues.
But Mr. Vassan, before you do respond, bear in mind that the minister was supposed to be in cabinet with the president. And he sat through his lecture. He sacrificed his time with the president, and because your matter has more importance than the cabinet. So your matter has escalated to that level. We have all been compelled to sit down and give a talk. On that note, I'd like you to say if you are happy with the process and if you are happy with the policy.
Thank you, Chairperson. It's just on a lighter note that, you know, sometimes one has your favorite minister. Now, from the minister's previous term, I could see the heart and good work that he was. I mean, I think this is his second term as Minister of Police, you know. And it's not just because of the nice hat that he's wearing, but, you know, he's one of my favorite ministers. I think I must also start to wear one of those hats that he's wearing, that nice hat.
Mr. Vassan, I'm going to start calling you out of order. You are just respecting and taking advantage of my meeting now. Please, Mr. Vassan, look now. Watch the act from the minister, please.
Chairperson, I just want to show you, know, that we not people, you know, that is angry with the police, you know. I did think to the minister communication, you know, but unfortunately, like we've heard, there is no communication. I'm not that cross anymore with the policeman, you know, because I know I value the hard work they've done. I was cross with our favorite head of detectives, Major General Veery and Lieutenant Colonel Kernia. But, you know, they are already forgiven because I know Mr. Veery has done tremendous work by catching high flyers, you know, in Worcester and that areas. So I appreciate the work they have done. So even the detective now, you know, we have worked with these few steps that he has done. It might seem small to him, but for us, the family, we appreciate it, you know. Now, just to say, we're not unreasonable. I came with an expectation to this meeting today is to say that we don't want final results. But what we want is that whilst he is hot at the moment, you know, I don't want him to, after today, again to put his foot off the pedal. It's just for the committee to, you know, keep some tabs on the detector. I mean, we befriended him now. We're not cross for him. We're not people like that can be cross for anyone, you know. So, and just a correction, Minister, it wasn't two witnesses that was killed. It was actually the accomplices that was in the car. But nevertheless, we are quite happy as a family, you know, and the importance that is receiving from the highest office, you know. So I'm just worried that I think you said the next meeting is next year only from the portfolio committee.
Mr. Vassan, we must report on this matter to the speaker. So if they don't have interest, we'll only attend to it next year. Right now, we must attend to it. Okay. Thank you very much for listening to this matter. Before we do adjourn, we have started the 16 days of activism against violence against women. And the minister has also been involved in the Safe Festive Season campaign. But I would like us to rise and observe a moment of silence for precious Ramabulana from Limpopo, the 21-year-old student camped, found dead. But Minister, when you do visit the family of Boyana Sergeant Ivanula, could you also convey the condolences and the deep regret from this community?
I would request respectively that we observe the movement of five or four.